This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it. History repeats itself,
try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the Place to Be Nation, you've made the cut. It's awful, but I'm here, JT, along with my buddy Aaron from the North. Aaron, how are you?
I am amazing, and that wasn't even that bad.
No, not bad. It's not bad at all. So if you've been listening along with us throughout this whole PTBN Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever project, you know that Aaron and myself have done a series of podcasts and a couple of pod blasts looking at our thoughts, how we're going to work our list, breaking down the candidates. We call them making the cut. Well, now that the list is complete and the ballots are submitted and all that, we're now going to talk about who made our cut on these podcasts. So, as you're listening to this, these are pre-recorded, so just know that the list is either fully out, maybe partially out. I have no idea when we're going to release these. So in some shape, form, or manner, you'll know most of the list probably by the time you hear these. But this is me and Aaron walking through our lists, right?
Yes, and I'm never going to release mine aside from these podcasts, so who knows when. You'll never see it.
That'll be it. So this is your only chance to learn about Aaron's list.
And about my life, really,
because
we're going to get into that, too.
True. We're going to get into a lot of things, I'm sure. So why don't we get started?
Yeah.
All right. So, Aaron, we both kind of have some depth to our list beyond just the top 100, because that's how we roll. We both went, pretty high with honorable mentions. So we both have enough honorable mentions that we wanted to at least cover 13 of them. So that's what we're going to do.
Yep.
Actually, is it 12 technically? Because I went up to 113.
Well, do you have a number 113?
8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Yes, I do. Okay.
Okay,
so we have 13.
Now that we got the basic math out of the way.
This is why Chad's needed to do all the math and accounting for us. All right, so we got 13 over the 100. So we're going to kind of briskly move through those. And our idea is, as we get to guys, like if they're close, if they're within like 10 of each other, we'll just talk about them when the name comes up and you can kind of reveal where they are. If I have someone at like 97 that you have at like 70, we're going to, you know, probably hide your spot where you have them, but talk about them a bit. And then when we get to that number, you can explain why you have them there. That makes sense.
Yeah, I'm going to be really cryptic and mysterious about it too.
Yeah, I expect nothing less.
Yeah, and maybe like weird too and sexual.
Okay, yeah, of course. It is a Wednesday night. That's what it's known for. Hump day. Also, I guess we should just call out that Aaron, can we mention this? That you're expecting child like at any moment?
Look, by the time you hear this, I'll probably have the child.
Right, I hope so.
Yeah.
It's a long way.
Yeah, I really hope so because – the Buster Bluth situation with claw marks in the uterus.
So we could, at any moment, I feel like we're just going to get started and then you're going to hear a scream for the other room. So we'll see. All right. Number 113. Here we go. I'm excited. I feel like we've been talking about this forever. My 113 is Bob Holly.
Oh, geez.
Do you have Holly anywhere on your list?
Yeah, I believe I have him at a solid number 130.
Okay. I will say this. I didn't put a lot of thought past like 104. I just listed guys that were kind of in my mind, right? And then I ranked them. So these are guys that like were in my thought process of perhaps maybe making the list.
Yeah, okay. Like, I mean, look, if you have Bob Holly in your top 100, you're dead to me.
Right. And he's not. He's at 113.
Good. That's why you're very much alive to me.
But I felt like I just had to recognize him a little bit for the hardcore Holly stuff. Like, I feel like he was pretty good for a stretch of early hardcore Holly, like that 99, 2000-ish stuff.
He's fun. And, like, his character's fun, too. Like, when he thinks he's a super heavyweight. And
That's all that. And then he was getting, like, sneaky good in the ring before he got that injury at the hands of Triple H. Remember they had that, like, or at the hands of Kurt Angle, I should say. He had that really good match with Triple H on Heat for the title when he was at his peak popularity. Almost like an internet darling for a little bit, too, in that stretch. And then Angle busted his forearm, and then he was just never quite the same. He never really regained the momentum he had in 2000 after that.
Yeah, and then he, as soon as he started tagging his music with, "How do you like me now?"
Right.
I was out. Also, how many people do you think we've alienated by me saying if you have Bob Holly on your list, you're dead to me?
Probably not many. And if they do, they're probably not worth anyway being alive anyway.
And now you've alienated them.
Yeah. Dan McGinn, you're fired. But the Yeah, the Bob Holly situation. I didn't mind him as Sparky. Like, I've been rewatching a lot of that. Scott and I have been doing all the Raws. We're into mid-95. And he in 95, he actually has a little dead cat bounce. Like, he is dead in the water at the end of 94. And then he pops back up with the tag team with Kid. They have the fun match with Smoking Guns. And then with Bigelow and Tatanka on back-to-back nights. And he starts to get a little bit more run on TV. He disappears again late in the year. But then I remember he pops back up. It's like he's on throughout 96, but not featured. And then he shows up randomly and beats Owen Hart on a Raw in Mobile in a non-title match for the IC belt in 97. And then Owen beats him the next week. But it's a pretty good back-to-back matches. And then he kind of goes dormant again until the Midnight Express and then the Brawl for All and then the hardcore stuff. Late era Holly. Yeah, go ahead.
Would you say in 95 he was as dead as Dale Earnhardt?
If only.
It's the only NASCAR guy I know.
Yeah, that's it. And Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Oh, yeah. Is there a senior too? Is there an old man who like rode like horse chariots around?
Mike Francisco was betting on him. So the I lost my place. Okay, so hardcore Holly.
Sorry.
Late era Holly I did not like teaming with Cody Rhodes, like all that stuff. I was done with him by that point. But he did have a little blip in there when him and Billy Gunn were teaming up as like the angry old men and just like stiffing guys like in 05, 06 ish in there somewhere, I think. Like just the passed over, warmed over, angry men with blonde hair. like I didn't mind that little blip.
I did not enjoy him. I mean, when, who was it? When Pewter was in the Pewter? What is it?
Pewter.
Daniel Pewter?
Pewter, yes.
Pewter? Okay. When he was in
Daniel
trouble.
Pewter!
Getting the shit kicked out of him by Benoit Guerrero, and the next guy it was Holly, and he looked so gleeful to come and hurt this kid. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen anybody happier to be doing anything.
Yeah, and I don't know if I can blame him. But
he was an asshole. I don't even know his name.
I mean, Holly does have a lot of douchey things on his resume. I'm not one. I haven't really factored it. I mean, I guess I can say it now. I think we've mentioned before. I am not ranking the convicted murderers. So Snuka and Benoit are off my list.
Snuka's not convicted.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's
that's
convicted.
The problem with the court of public opinion, Justin.
Okay. So the people I'm confident murdered people are off my list. but the there's a lot of other guys with many other transgressions. So yes, I didn't really factor those in unless it directly like affected. Yeah, but even then, I was kind of lenient. Like, the political backstage stuff, I didn't really factor in too much, you know? So like, a guy like Holly, who's a prick and, like, stiffed guys, yeah, it's shitty. So maybe it subconsciously it played a role in the back of my mind to say I don't want him on my list. I wouldn't, like, stand for him. You know, I wouldn't fight on the hill for him because of some of that stuff. But whatever. I mean, he's – everyone's got that shit. So
it is what it is. Yeah, each one of them has ruined at least one person's life, usually a significant other. So, can't really take that too seriously.
No, not at all. All right, do you want to touch on your 113?
Sure. I mean, like, I think mine was a little different than yours because I made my list really early, right?
Yeah.
And then, as we talked about, I'm sure. And then there was a lot of guys I researched. And so what we're into here are guys that I originally probably put in the top 100 mm-hmm. but got bumped out.
Right.
As time went on.
Okay.
And I would say like a good like 25 guys got bumped out of my top 100.
Right.
And so my 113 is a guy who I really wanted to – pardon me?
Battle Cat.
Yeah, it is Battle Cat. 113A is Battle Cat.
He had a big jump up moment on Superstars of June of 1990.
When he purred and played with that ball in the ring, like, I was in cat heaven, right? And I know Glenn Butler will probably be there with
me.
Meow. Meow. Meowch, actually. But my 113 is the guy I wanted to include, but I just couldn't justify in the end, and that's Luke Harper.
Yeah.
I think Luke Harper is a beast in the ring. I love watching him every time he's out there. His run with the Wyatts. Do you have him on your – anywhere?
He was 113. Fuck you, Bob Holly. No, I didn't put him on here. yeah, he's a guy I really, really like. He probably would have been not far off 100. Again, I didn't put a ton of thought into my guys post 100. I just made like a list of 13 men that I would have maybe liked, but I couldn't.
You would have liked to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, like what I love about him is, I mean, he's got obviously the Wyatt tag run. Like everything he did with Rowan against the Usos is amazing. Right. What doesn't really get a lot of play is how great a character he is. Mm-hmm. Like, if you watch him, even when he's seconding Bray Wyatt, like, he's constantly in character.
Right.
He's constantly engaged, and he's super fun to watch. He's got his IC title match was fun. His ladder match with Ziggler was great. I would even say Survivor Series 2014, he was one of the MVPs of that big match where Sting interfered.
Yeah.
And I think what hurts him is he doesn't really have anything close to a tippy top singles match.
Right.
And I'd like to see more from him. He's one of the guys who's probably hurt on promos. But again, his character's amazing, so it doesn't really bother me that much. He's a guy I wish they'd run with a bit more. Like, when they gave Mahal the title, like, out of nowhere, like, he's a guy I think would be really great for that. I'm sure we'll talk about a couple of those guys. But yes. He's a guy I think would be, like, really – would have been really good in that position. He's a great big man, great agility, moves around the ring well, really good seller. So, Luke Harper, 113 for me.
Yeah, no, he's a guy that's, again, like you said, to me probably just didn't have enough. But he, he's got all the Shield Shield Wyatt stuff as well, which he was part of. And like you said, the Usos matches were great too. And I'm excited about this Bludgeon Brothers stuff too, like just seeing the murder jobbers has been a lot of fun on SmackDown. So I think a guy, if we did this, I'm hoping in another like 4 or 5 years, he would be on the list. I'm hoping that he gets that kind of chance.
Like, I wonder how good the Wyatt family would be if he and Bray Wyatt had switched positions. Like, if he was the one they built around. I don't know how good a promo he is.
Well, if you had like, Bray just as, like, a manager talking for him.
Yeah, because he's so much better in the ring than Bray.
Yeah, you could have done that, where he's the worker and Bray's the talker.
Yeah.
And then Bray's the guy you're trying to get to, right? Like, the boss. But Harper is the guy that
like
Heenan, knows all the work.
Like, Heenan back in the day.
Right, basically, yeah.
Right, no, he's too suit. Good.
All right, my 112 is a guy I just mentioned a moment ago, and that's Billy Gunn. I do think he has enough on his resume to at least warrant a quick conversation. I didn't really seriously consider him for the 100 because I think there's no one I'd be willing to bump for him. But I do think, you know, he had a bunch of good matches with the Smoking Guns, all of the big moments with the New Age Outlaws. Was, for better or worse, one of the most recognizable stars of the Attitude Era, at least the early portion of it, with, you know, the Mr. Ass gimmick and all that. It was fairly well known. And he hung around for a bit and had, you know, sneaky stuff here and there. A guy that really doesn't have, again, like you've mentioned for Harper, a guy that didn't have that standout singles match. They tried, but he never really cracked it. But he's got his moments and mostly just a tag guy. So, again, you'll see this kind of a trend here. My bottom guys that missed the cut, tag guys, they didn't really ever get that moment as a singles. But my favorite all-time Billy Gunn moment is that Invasion, is that Survivor Series 01 in the contracts, where the fuck it was called, Battle Royal. Do you remember what it was called?
The Immunity.
Feast or Famine. Yeah, Immunity Battle Royal. Feast or Famine. When he goes to do the Famous Round, the crowd just blows up out of nowhere, and even he looks surprised that anyone cared. Like, that was the highlight. That and Vince telling him and Big Show that he doesn't care if they call themselves Double Trouble Crap on a Stick for all he gives a shit, whatever they want to call themselves. But I think Billy at least deserves a nod because he was there for so long. Was a focal point for a lot of the time, especially in the late 90s, and some memorable moments.
Yeah, I have him at about 124. Like, I thought about him, too. Yeah. Same kind. Like, everybody who I really thought anything of, I kind of gave consideration to. So you're right. I think he's really hurt by that failed singles run more than anything else, though. Like, if he had even had just a passable singles run, I think he might have snuck on because his tag work is actually quite solid. Like, Smoking Guns are pretty underrated for that era.
Oh, yeah, and like, they had no one to work with. I mean, nobody.
No. And you're right. And especially towards the end, like, I just watched the match the other night where he was fighting Jamie Noble so Noble could sleep with Torrie Wilson.
Yes, that's kind of his last big feud. Well, he's around, and I think he's around to, like, 05, but yeah, that was like kind of his last like featured. They kind of rebooted him as Mr. Ass with the music again and all that on SmackDown. And then he has that match where he gets the shit kicked out of him by, like, I think it's Mordecai or one of those guys on the in 04. Yes. But.
And then he comes back in, was it 2015?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or 14?
Blip.
Do they win the tag title? They do, don't they?
Yeah, we were there. Weren't you there? That was that Pittsburgh or Philly where they won?
Yeah.
I think it was Philly.
No,
right?
It was in Philly.
No, it was
because
Pittsburgh.
The Usos beat them. Like,
it was Pittsburgh. Are you sure? Yeah, because they beat Cody Goldust.
Yeah, you're right. And they got killed by the Shield at WrestleMania that year.
Yeah, memorable little run. It was a decent comeback run there.
Yeah, look, I never bought into the he's terrible thing. I thought he was okay. He was fine. Yeah. Like, good tag wrestler, but failed singles run.
It's Kevin Kelly's homeboy.
Oh, well.
Bump him up. All right, what's your 112?
John Morrison. And I think you have him higher, right?
Yeah, he's coming up in the next. We can talk about him. I won't tell you what number he is yet, but we can have the conversation. He's on the border of like that decision point.
Sure. So for me, I really like John Morrison. Like I think, you know, if you were to, the guy still to this day looks like a star and moves like a star. And when you see him in TNA now, like when I saw him in TNA, I brought my 5-year-old son to the TNA tapings, and he was all over John Morrison. Like, it was like he really dug everything he did. Yeah. I thought it was a pretty solid heel and a really good face. I thought it was good at both. Very good tag work with Eminem, but also really decent singles run, which I liked. He's got that Eminem run. They have that feud with Hardy. I think he's a pretty underrated television worker for the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when there wasn't a ton of great TV performances, I thought he was quite good.
Dearth of talent during that stretch.
Yeah. I liked him in ECW fighting Punk. You know, something that I don't know if he gets credit for enough today is he was really the first one to start the whole Royal Rumble crazy eliminations.
Yes.
Which Kingston kind of took over from. And I loved his feud with Sheamus. I think it was the end of 10.
Yeah.
At the end of 2010. They did a Last Man Standing. Was that on Raw? I think it was. Or False Count Anywhere. False Count Anywhere, which I really liked. And I always kind of wish that they would have kind of pulled the trigger with him a bit more. Like that is, I think that year where Cena fought Miz, I think there was there's probably something in Morrison challenging for the title there. It would have had to be built up a bit. But.
No, I don't think he needed to, because their match on Raw is the January 3rd, 11 Raw. They had a False Count Anywhere match. It was just phenomenal, Miz and Morrison, for the title. And Miz won. And then Miz was kind of doing the Lawler stuff. And there was a lot of clamoring to where when Rock was announced to be coming back. And I remember this in depth because we covered it in the very beginning days of the Place to Be podcast, is would they do Cena Rock at 27 and have Miz defending against Morrison instead? And I think he was up there. I mean, I do. And they gave him a pretty good spot on that Mania. That was with the Snooki and Trish.
Yeah,
I mean,
with
you know,
Trish.
That was a pretty featured spot with, you know, that was the celebrity match. So,
and if there was ever a time where you could have moved Cena out, like Cena is, you could have put him against Rock maybe, but you also could have put him against Undertaker.
Right.
Like, and that would have been maybe one of the better times to actually do that match.
Yeah.
So I think, it could have definitely made sense. And it's a shame because in the end, that's again, like I was talking about with Harper, it's that kind of knocks him off the list, that he didn't really have that top run.
Yeah, he has a little bit more of one, though, I think, and that's what gets me to get him into the list. Like, he has some of the more success as a singles than like those other guys did. It just wasn't superstar-level success, right? So, like, I think he was really good in the ECW stuff. I think he was pretty good in the IC title division. I think he was really good against The Miz. And actually, his last match was against Miz in the False Count Anywhere as well. November 28, 2011. He got a skull-crushing finale on the steel entranceway, and that was it. But no, I liked him and Punk. One of the big negatives was, if you remember that first, I think it was right when they moved him to Raw, him and Melina, and they did that awful fucking press conference in the ring, and it just bombed huge. And I think he did take some time to recover from that. His Eminem work is top-notch. They had a ton of great matches. The biggest ones that you mentioned were with the Hardys. I mean, that may be the best classic-style, pure tag match in WWE history. That Eminem Hardy's.
Until we get to the revival stuff, probably this like in the last
Correct.
Couple of years.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I agree with that. And I mean, you could give me the No Mercy 02 tag, but those were guys put together. So when I'm talking like actual pure tag teams.
Oh yeah.
Not like stars meshed, like a Benoit angle. Like those are main eventers put into a match. And that to me, that's the best tag match they've ever had. But this was like two legit tag teams going at it in a no bullshit, no gimmick match, and they were tremendous. He's got some good jump up moments too. Even the stuff with K-Fed, remember, like he was involved with all that with Cena.
Yeah.
So he was around for a while, and I think being the workhorse of a division that was lacking big time, when you think of the emptiness that was on TV during that stretch, like you mentioned, I think that goes for something too, because he definitely stood out amongst that pack. He had that really good match too with Shelton and Carlito, if you remember the IC title 3-way.
Yeah. I think he's just hurt by the fact that like he he was like the kind of the figurehead of that division in a time where the company didn't give a fuck about that division.
Right. Yes.
So the characters were kind of non-existent. The storylines were non-existent. It was like you'd have an Intercontinental Defense 1 month, and then you wouldn't have one for another three. And then it just pop up. Like, it was that kind of thing that I think kind of makes him seem less important than he probably was.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But on the flip side, he worked, you know, like he got it done.
Yeah, yeah.
And I even liked him as far back as when he was doing the Johnny Nitro stuff with Bischoff, and he was kind of the lackey. Like, I thought that was pretty good. Like, you know, I thought he had some good. I always thought he was a good character, even though he wasn't the best talker. But I think he's worked on that. I think if he ever comes back, he's a guy that, like a Drew McIntyre or Jeff Hardy, like that could have like a big time run, because he comes across more as a big time star now than he was then.
Yeah, I hope he does come back.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't want him to come back and then for them to bury him. Like,
no, yeah. I think he's got, like, the look and everything else.
Yeah, and he's gotten better at the character stuff. Like, I don't know if you watched a lot of Lucha Underground, but
yes, I did.
His character on Lucha Underground was really nice, really strong for a while.
And he's finally done with Melina, right?
I think he's with the banging that other one, Taya.
Okay. Yeah, so that's good. Because I do think she was a big part of his stunted pushes. I think he could have been a bigger star if they didn't have the macho nonsense where Vince, you know, didn't respect him because he was basically letting Melina cuckold him with the rest of the locker room. So, I mean, he never stood up to Batista and all that stuff, and they lost respect for him. And, like, I do wonder if he would have gotten even a stronger push if he was looked at in a better light. So I do think she was an anchor around his neck for a while there, too.
Isn't that the stupidest thing? It's a reason to not push a guy.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Like, fans love him. He's awesome. No, I don't know. He let a guy bang his wife.
But I do think part of it too is that I think she just was a political, you know, whatever, torch in the back.
Bomb.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that in general probably hurt him that he had any association with her. Like, he would just, because he'd defend her, stand by her, and everything else. And she was always in heat, you know, had heat, or she was in heat
or
a lot
in
too.
Heat.
Yes.
Possible.
A lot of hot water. So I think that bled over to him too a lot, you know.
Yeah, Matt Hardy should learn a lesson there and keep Rebby as far away from that backstage as possible.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I keep seeing people wonder if, like, she'll be dragged into the broken universe in WWE and or woken universe, whatever the fuck it is. And I mean, he probably shouldn't. Like, if you want to use Senior Benjamin or whatever, do that. But I'd probably leave Rebby and Max.
He was in, she was in the last video he posted.
Not the, like, one that was
in the
on
background?
TV, though, right?
No, but, like, his own, like, Christmas video. She's in the background rolling around in tight pants, which, I mean, is fine.
Right. Yeah, leave her there. Like, don't bring her to Uniondale or wherever the fuck, you know. All right, so what was that? How far are we?
That's 112.
Okay. All right,
We're far.
We're getting there. We're going to do like 75 hours worth of podcast on this. All right, so Matt Bourne is my 111. A guy, I wanted to work him in because he was so good as Doink, but at the end of the day, just real short run. I mean, his Doink run was, what, November 92, and as a wrestler was March of 93. And he's gone by September. And his initial run, too, is not very long either. And it's like a year, if that, I think, in like the early 80s. And he doesn't have anything stand out. He's just a good hand at that point. But Doink, very super memorable character, great promos, a couple of big moments, and a couple of really good matches, you know, that you kind of forget about. He's got the stuff with Brett at SummerSlam 93, the matches with Mr. Perfect, the match with Jannetty. His moments are, you know, turning on Crush, the double Doinks at Mania. With Crush as well, and then throwing the water on Bobby, you know, like some big memorable stuff there. So warrants recognition when it comes to nut cutting time for me in the top 100. I just couldn't put him again above some of the other ones because it's so limited. But for a guy that made an evil clown character work so well, he's going to get recognized.
Yeah, like I like Matt Bourne. I like Doink. I don't even have him in my top 130. Which is kind of where I stopped considering guys. But I won't deny that character is amazing. And his work on throwing that, not only that water on Bobby, but throwing that water on Bruce Hart and not hitting Owen Hart is quite a feat that few could probably do.
Yes. The hate was that much that the water just kind of morphed and made sure it only hit Bruce.
Well, did you ever read Brett's book? He talks about it where he's like basically like Owen threatens him and says like, if you hit me with one drop, I'm going to rib you forever.
Yeah.
And so, and the best part about Bruce Hart, because they didn't know it was happening. Owen knew, but the other – Bruce didn't. And the best part is you hear Bobby Heenan roar with laughter on commentary, but like roar to the point where like you knew he was getting real personal enjoyment out of seeing Bruce Hart wet.
It's so good. Oh, it's so good. Bruce is such a fucking schmuck.
Yeah, Bruce is a prick. But Doink is also a prick, but a good prick. I love the I actually just watched WrestleMania 9 not too long ago, and I like that moment, like where he comes out and smacks him with the cast, and it's kind of hokey in a show full of stupid finishes.
Right.
But it's good. If that in a vacuum would have been fine. So I think if Doink had always been Matt Bourne, there'd be no question he'd be on the list.
Right.
Unfortunately, we get that. We got a lot of crap after that. So,
you know, in my mind too, I always used to like bemoan him turning face. But in watching those Raws not that long ago, Bourne is still Doink for like a couple weeks. And I think even as a face, it could have worked because he was still wrestling like that aggressive kind of angry style. He was just kind of wrestling faces. I mean, wrestling heels instead of faces. Like, he was still a douche and still getting it done on the mat and everything. What killed him was the character turned into, like, just a clown for kids, you know, versus, like, the character. Like, as the face, he was still true to the Doink character when he was still Bourne for those couple weeks.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, when he started being in the vicinity of inviting Dink and Wink and Pink, when that became a possibility, forget it. The character was done.
Dink was the knife through the throat because he actually wasn't even too bad with the Bigelow feud, like, at first on leading into Survivor Series where they do the fake Doinks and all that stuff. Like, he was still a real dick even when it wasn't Bourne. But Dink arriving with Santa was like that was the death knell. That was it.
I don't know. That Survivor Series match, that was also one of the worst matches in company history.
Right,
so.
But Doinks, which I one? Mean, the Bigelow one?
No, when Bigelow and the head shrink, where they're eating the food in the ring, and God damn it.
But the Doink character wasn't involved in that. So the build to that was
he brought the clowns in. He introduced the match.
Oh, come on. He wasn't in it.
He's responsible.
But the build was fine. He was still an asshole. Like, it wasn't until Dink came that he became a goof, is my point. But anyway, I also think WrestleMania 9, was that one of Bobby's, like, really big last great moments? Like, I thought he was really good at putting over the double Doink stuff.
It's an illusion. It's an illusion. He kept saying illusion and overemphasizing the loo. Illusion. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. All right. What's your 111?
111. Look, I mean, some people might have him above Shawn Michaels. I have him at number 111. It's Finley. it's a lot of continuity for you to follow if you've been listening along to all these things. Do you have him higher or lower?
He's not on my 113.
Oh, not even in.
No. I mean, he's a guy that probably would be it. Again, I want people to know the key guys I consider from 100 to 113, but do not take this. Like, there might be like 10 other guys I probably would have put above Bob Holly, but I really just stopped putting the effort in.
You wanted to talk about Bob Holly. I understand.
Right. Well, I just get to the point where, like, I was just done thinking of guys, and I'm like, those were guys that I kind of had scratched on a piece of paper, so I just kind of put them in this bucket at the end. So,
yeah.
Finley, yeah, I probably would have had him like around here is my guess.
Yeah, like, and look, he's clearly great in the ring.
Yeah.
He's really good as a heel. He's good as a face, too. I hated his tag team with Hornswoggle. It made me want to kill myself. I liked that he looked like a crazy old man who'd beat you up if you went on his lawn. I liked that a lot. I had a real problem with the shillelagh, but I have a real problem with weapons that would kill you in real life. Like, I have the exact same problem with the sledgehammer. Like, as soon as I see a sledgehammer hit someone in the head in a match, it's like, I'm out of the match forever. And that's how I feel about the shillelagh. Like, it might as well be a katana, like, that you're hitting someone with. I did like his original US title run. I liked his work in the Money in the Bank matches that he was in. He was a very good television worker for SmackDown for a very long time.
Oh, yeah.
Very few bad matches. But he's just hurt by never really having that tippy-top match.
Or moment,
not even a great match. He's never really used to his potential, and I really think the face Hornswoggle stuff is really not that great. Now, his character work, though, I like, because he's exactly what he says he is. Like, that little bit of, I love to fight, like, that's exactly him, and it came across. And stiff guy, stuff looked legit, good, like, just a really good wrestler, but just killed in this list for me by the lack of great moments.
Yeah, Will Stiff, too, talking about him. So it works well. To me, the death knell of Finley was when they switched from the slower music to the Hornswoggle's stupid music.
Oh, yeah.
That was, like, to me, that was the turning point of not coming back. Because I didn't mind him when he was a little bastard and he was beating the shit out of him and throwing him in the ring. When they revealed that he was his son, that was the turning point. And they were, like, happy friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I liked him when he used him as a weapon. Like, that was fun.
Yeah, yeah, that was fine. Or he'd come sneaky. Yeah. But no, I don't want to see this man with his midget son, like, living a happy life.
Like that, I hated that fucking song. That was.
I wonder what Irish people felt about that.
I don't know. I know Glenn loved it.
This is all we think of your culture.
Yes.
An angry, drunken, mad guy and a midget dressed as a leprechaun.
I mean, I think it's pretty accurate.
Well, they're leaving out the drinking and the sadness. Yes. There's a lot of that.
Great worker. I guess his best match is probably, the Benoit one in 06 on one of those pay-per-views?
Yep, that memorable match.
Right? It was like No Mercy. It was like Benoit's return. Well, they kind of did a round robin throughout that year. Like, Benoit fought Regal on one, Regal fought Finlay on one, and Finlay fought Benoit on one. Like, they were kind of scattered throughout the year, but they were all kind of match of the night on those shows. I liked him a lot in his initial run because he had some really unique spots he would work in, like when he would trap the guy in the ring apron and pummel him there, like stuff like that. He definitely brought out like a smarter style during a time where there wasn't really one. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I remember when he came back, at first I was like, oh, him? But yeah. He was always kind of a brush of fresh air because he was constantly doing those things.
Yeah, doing different stuff. He had a realistic style. He worked smart. Like, you could just tell he was a good guy to learn from. And that's why I thought it made a lot of sense when they paired him with Lashley. Like, that was a good, really good feud. And he learned a lot from working with him. So, yeah, I liked Finley during that initial run, during the stuff with Lashley and Kennedy and all that. He had a good match with Benoit. He's got something in there with Regal. I liked him in the King's Court with him and Regal and Booker. Like, I thought that was cool. Especially when he basically said, like, it's every guy from South toward the end there. But yeah, once they did the reveal with Hornswoggle is when I went downhill. So again, a guy that doesn't really have any big moments. You know, I know Will has talked highly about that match, him and JBL. It was a Mania. Is it 28?
24. The Belfast Brawl.
Yeah, like that was really disappointing to me. Like, I didn't think that was that great at all. And I was really looking forward to it at the time. I did like JBL kicking Hornswoggle down.
When he throws the garbage can at him and just nails him in the face.
But, yeah, good high-quality veteran. I think this is about right. Recognize his name, but just doesn't have enough resume to be up there. That's all.
Yeah, and I think, like, a guy like him is really, for me anyway, is very telling to what my list is about. Because, like, my list tends to skew a lot more for me in terms of, like, moments and how important they were to the company. Like, I factor everything in, but I think I put those two things a bit higher. So right. A guy like him doesn't have a chance because as much as he was kind of a glue guy in that era – he didn't in the great scheme of things didn't matter.
Right.
Which was it's kind of sad considering how good he is.
Yeah, I agree. All right, what do we got? 110?
110.
All right. I'm going to tackle 110 and 109 together, okay?
Oh, are we doing a tag team?
Well, actually 108, they're all kind of tied. All right, we'll do one at a time. They're all kind of tied together though. All right, my 110 is the Barbarian. A guy I loved in the ring once he broke away from the Warlord. A couple of good moments with Powers of Pain, but once he kind of got away from that, went with Bobby Heenan, started doing the teaming with Haku. He reminds me of Finley in a lot of ways in that he doesn't really have that big moment or match, but he had a great presence, a memorable character, and was just really solid in the ring. A guy that really became a better worker later on when he got to WCW, I think. But his stretch from, like, late 90 until he leaves is all pretty solid work. Like, Survivor Series 90, he kind of has this forgotten run in there against Hogan at the end of that match. That was really good. A really good match with the Big Boss Man at Rumble 91. The tag at 7. He's got some stuff with Brett, some singles matches with Brett that were pretty good in 91 into 92. And then even when he comes back with Fatu as the head shrinkers, like he's pretty good. I watched a match where he took a powerbomb from Diesel on the floor. From Sid on the floor on Raw. I think that's how they wrote him out as the head shrinkers. That was a really cool spot. So that was like his last televised match. So again, a guy I wanted to recognize, not nearly enough meat to make my list, but worth an honorable mention in my book.
Yeah, like a really solid hand, a really good worker that they just never really put anything behind. Like, if they had built him up properly, there's no reason why he couldn't be a foil for, like, a Hogan or a Warrior or in a small program. But for whatever reason, they just didn't choose him.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Or Warlord. It's kind of weird. And he could have been a pretty credible like Warrior was a guy that needed challengers bad in 90. Like, I'm kind of surprised they didn't throw Bobby and Barbarian at him for a bit there in the summer.
Yeah, but I question if, like, Barbarian had enough star power to do that. Like, I mean, there's a lot wrong with that Warrior push, but I think a big part of it is that the top heel is basically programmed with another guy. So I wonder if who else could have slotted into that, or if they hadn't have killed Perfect at WrestleMania.
Right.
Like, those are probably the guys that Warrior should have been fighting.
Sure, but you could have thrown Barbarian at him for, like, a Saturday Night's Main Event or, you know, a house show run or something. He was, I think, credible enough. You know, they did get a good push as Powers of Pain, obviously. They had a pretty good run there, all the stuff with Demolition and whatnot. So, again, a guy I wanted to recognize, but just not enough there. It reminds me of maybe a slightly poorer Mance Finley in a way.
I love the way he kind of shucks and jives with his shoulders. Like, I think, like, if he had had the Jive Soul Bro music, forget it.
Yeah.
We're talking top 30.
Think so?
Right now. Oh, man, you can see him, the way he just, I'm doing it, you can't tell I'm doing it in my room, but, like, you gotta imagine me as the Barbarian, right? Like,
put the antlers
with the fur
in.
And the paint. Yeah. Yeah, and the antlers, and Bobby Heenan off to the side, but I'm still moving the show. Anyway.
Yeah.
Just picture it.
Okay. I'm picturing. Good. I like it. I want that to be the first image your child sees as they enter the world.
Oh, look, we've been call all, because of the first child, we didn't know we didn't find out the sex ever, right?
Yeah.
So we called it the Yeti after the Yeti.
Yeah.
And my wife begged me not to scream, it's the Yeti. It came up.
So you're gonna yell as the Barbarian this time?
I think I'll be dancing as the Barbarian. The Yeti.
A great top rope clothesline. He just destroys Tito at 6 and Hogan at Survivor Series 90 with him. That Boss Man match I love. Oh, it's so fun.
That's Rumble, right?
Yeah, Rumble 91. They just beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah, it's fun.
All right, what's your 110?
110 is a guy I wish I could have included. I love him so much, but there's just not enough. And that's Rusev.
Ah, Rusev, yes.
Like, I don't know, where is he for you?
Around here.
Yeah, all right.
Not listed.
If you thought about him, got
not
it.
Listed.
If you cared enough to do a top 10.
You know, I'm so, like, down on the way they're handling him.
I know.
He just doesn't have enough, but he's so good. He's so fucking
good. He's so good. Like, why was it not him instead of Jinder Mahal?
Right.
Why didn't they want to go into Russia? Like, that's a big market. There's a lot of places, a lot of cold places they could go. Amazing foreigner heel, like, very strong. His initial run's amazing. Winning the U.S. title from Sheamus was fun. I really like his run against the Giants, like when he's fighting Mark Henry and he's fighting Big Show. He's got this moment in one of his matches where I think it might be against Big Show where he basically puts his head next to his back to see if he can hear his heart. And I love it. It's like an animal killing someone. And I think he just got absolutely destroyed by the Cena feud. It just killed any momentum he had as a character.
But in a way, it actually after that is when he started to get like really good.
His personality started to come out a lot more.
I think he had to, right, to stay relevant. Like, he's just doing whatever he can to not be forgotten. Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's really great. He's really, really, really good. Really funny. Underrated comic guy.
Oh, he's hilarious.
His timing is so good. I mean, he's getting Aiden English over in this ridiculous tag team with the Rusev Day stuff. I mean, he warrants consideration. He's a guy like Harper, where I'm hoping if we do this in 5 years, he's way up there because they use him finally. And I don't get why they don't. I mean, he has everything they want. He's big. You know, he's a pretty good-looking guy. Funny, can work. Like, May's a little too short, I guess. Is that it? I don't know.
Is Vince angry that he has a hot wife?
Yeah. That's been said as was part of the issue with them, right? For sure. Yeah.
It's so stupid. Like, and that whole thing with them getting punished for announcing they were like the announcing they were engaged is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Right.
Ever in my life.
Right.
Not only that, like, if you're an actor on a show, like, we get that you're not the character. But
right.
Like, but Triple H and Stephanie on their Twitter accounts say things like, I play a bad guy on TV.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, it's ridiculous. But in this era, it's ridiculous. You can't be on one hand doing Tough Enough on the network or the 24/7 or whatever the fuck it is, the thing where they were doing the training ground. What was that, Breaking Ground? Yeah, that whole thing.
Breaking
where they're
ground, yeah.
Right. And you can't do that on one hand and having Triple H giving emotional speeches and taking pictures of everyone. And then on TV, he's doing whatever he wants. And then you punish Rusev for saying they're married or whatever or engaged.
Right.
And they stuck with that whole awful Dolph stuff. Like, it was just a rough go, but... A guy, I mean, the tank alone gets him at least into the conversation.
The tank was amazing. He should ride that thing down to the ring every
match. Oh, Rusev. All right, my 109 is, yes, in relation to the Barbarian, and that's Haku. Really solid in the mid-80s with the Islander stuff, both as a face and then as a heel. They're so good. Him and Tama are great. And I'll just say, I have Tama at 108, so I have them at 109, 108. And Tama's a guy I've actually gained a lot more appreciation for, both through watching and from listening to Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty. They did whole retrospectives on the Islanders, just realizing how much talent that guy had. Also, his work, I always fuck this up, but I'm pretty sure it's the same guy, right? That was doing the Tonga Kid stuff with Roddy Piper in 84, but with Snuka.
Sure. I don't know. You know, I don't want to...
Pretty sure that was him.
Let's go with that.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Tonga Kid. It was. Same guy. So he comes in as Tonga Kid in 83, 84, and he's part of the feud with Snuka and Piper, just real hot feud, just crazy pops and everything. Then he comes back. He starts teaming with Haku. They turn heel, and he is, if you haven't watched his stuff from 87, just if you want to see, like, perfect heel work, it is him. Like, every sneer, every grouse at the ref, as he's walking through the ring to tag, he'll stomp the guy in the face and then laugh at the crowd. Like, every little heel mannerism you could want from, like, a tag guy like that, he has it in spades. Charisma through the roof. He's a guy that I think could have been a big star if it wasn't for drug issues. Great tag matches as part of the Islanders, both with Strikeforce, the Can-Ams, and all that stuff. And of course, memorable feud with the Bulldogs. They had Haku and Tama when they sold Matilda and all that. Tama fades, and then Haku, of course, travels on as a singles guy. Again, no big jump-up moments or matches, but just more solid career stuff, like a Finley. A guy that you could throw in there for 20 minutes with Hogan, and you'd get a good match. A guy you could throw in there with a Tito Santana, Big Boss Man, whoever it was. You know, you could put him in there, you know you were guaranteed a good workhorse match. And credibility as a tough guy. And then, of course, his great return in the 0-1 Rumble with the big poofy hair. It was a really fun moment. And then, and even him and Rikishi against, like, Taker and shit was pretty fun for a couple weeks before he got hurt and kind of vanished. But he's a guy, to me, that merits consideration. I know some have him much higher, but a guy that doesn't have much promo skills and no big moments or matches besides a handful. I can't justify putting him in the top 100, but he's good enough and I like him enough to mention him here.
Yeah, I got Haku at 103, so I got him just a bit kind of above you. And Tom I don't have, but that's kind of silly of me. I probably should because I love the Islanders. I find they're maybe my favorite team of that era. And you really have to search for their great matches, but once you find them, like they're just great.
Yeah,
like them, and strangely enough, I really dig the Young Stallions as well during that period. I find the tag division then I like the lower tier guys a lot more than the upper tier guys. But yeah, I love Haku, just a legitimate guy, you know, more than anything else. And his King run, I mean, at first it was kind of stupid, but for me it worked. Like, it gave him something to do. And I liked his match with Harley Race at...
Yeah, that's a lot of fun at the Rumble.
The 89 Rumble.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. His promos get... He gets hurt with his promos and his character. Mm-hmm. Like, no real tippy-top matches. What a fantastically beautiful crescent kick, though.
Oh, perfect crescent kick.
Back before it was... when it was just a crescent kick.
Yes. It's a wonderful crescent kick.
Oh, look at that. I thought he was a really good gatekeeper.
Yep.
For guys like going to challenge either Warrior or Hogan, like to get through him first. Like, I really dug Haku, and you're right. His return in 01 was a lot of fun and a genuine surprise, which was rare at the time, too.
Yeah.
Because
it was a great surprise.
WCW Hardcore Champion.
No, that was a really fun surprise. Just a favorite of mine as well. Anything on Tama?
No, I like him a lot. Yeah, everything you said is, and I love the Islanders. I probably should have considered him more, but I didn't, so. Shame on me.
All right, so who's your 109, and then you can do your 108.
Well, 109 is I have Shelton Benjamin.
Okay, yep.
109. Where do you got him about for you?
A little bit higher. He's in my actual 100, but not too far away.
Oh, okay.
So we can talk about him here, and then I'll just mention when we get to it. Actually,
sure.
He's a little bit away, more than I thought.
Okay, well, look, I'll just give, like, why he just didn't make the cut for me. a guy I always wanted more out of. Like, and it always frustrated me that him being as good as he was never enough for the company. Like, he was a great singles wrestler, very good in tags too. I thought he was actually a much better face than a heel. Like, I liked his World's Greatest Tag Team stuff, but I thought his face work was stronger. And his athleticism was off the charts. I mean, and you got a lot of his jump up stuff. We'll save it to talk about it later when he comes up for you.
Yeah.
But I think what really hurts him and what took him off the list for me is he becomes, in the same way of John Morrison, like a forgotten guy for like a good substantial part of his career.
Yeah.
Where he's suddenly the U.S. champ, and then we don't see him for a few weeks. Then he pops up, and I hated the mama stuff. Hated the mama stuff. And it was frustrating because this is a guy who went out and proved that he could get a match over on his own. But then they still felt the need to put this weird comedy act with him, and it just fell flat for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wish I could have put him in. My 108 is we talked about her at length on one of our making the cuts is China. I didn't end up getting her in my top 100, but for the reasons I mentioned at her podcast, I thought she was hugely important to the era. I thought she was so different than everybody else. I thought her matches in general were not horrible. And so, like, I wanted to give her some sort of a shout out. She was somewhat groundbreaking. I think she would have been more groundbreaking had there been more after her.
Right.
That had Asia become a thing, and then they did Australia, and you know, or whatever,
Antarctica,
whatever.
Yes.
Antarctica, whatever the next
here is was. South Pole.
Oh, welcome South America. But
yeah,
they're
just doing glow stuff. That's it.
Right.
Here's Russia.
But like, alone for that, I really like that Jericho series. I mean, I don't know if I've ever marked out more than that Jericho match at Survivor Series 99 and had been so deflated when she beat him.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have a huge body of work in terms of matches, no tip-top matches. She has some matches that are pretty bad, and her women's title run was weak.
Yeah.
Not a good promo. Silent character work, though. Good bodyguard. So, I don't know. I kind of wanted to throw her a bone and talk about her. She's someone who probably deserves to be in the Hall of Fame in terms of, like,
the
WWE.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think just a bit over time has become a kind of forgotten as how over she was and how important she was to DX.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to rank her like a woman. Don't rank her like a man.
Don't rank her like you know her.
Just rank her for what she is. I do not have her on my list, as I pretty much had said I wasn't going to when we talked about her. But, yeah, I think there's two what-ifs with her. What if, like, her and Triple H never ended poorly and if she would have hung around? You know, say they would have broken up well in advance of Triple H getting with Steph or something like that, and she's, you know, they were friends or something. And then the other what if is if she wasn't a fucking mental case, if she would have came back eventually, and what she could have done with, like, another wave of women. You know what I mean? And if she didn't melt down and end up dying, like, is she someone that would be coming around now? Like, in this alternate universe where her and Triple H and Stephanie, like, were all kind of fine, you know, would she have come back and been like Alita now, like presenting the belt to people? You know, how does that change her perception in the way you mentioned, if she had, you know, more people to work with, or more, if people had come after her in a stronger way? What if she was around now and presented more as a legend? Does that change her perception of her run at all? Maybe she has a match here or there too, comes back now and then. So, you know, I think that's the alternate reality that was needed to maybe get her onto a list like this in my eyes.
Yeah. Like, she'd be like an Ultimate Warrior, basically. How they kind of retconned him.
Right. Yes. Yeah. 100%. Yep. Except, hopefully, she doesn't die in a heart attack in a parking lot of a hotel.
2 days later. 2 days later.
That's still Matt,
what a good
thing ever.
That's a good what if, though. If, like, she just stays with Triple H, and so Triple H doesn't marry Stephanie.
Oh, that, I mean, that's a whole other crazy what if. My what if is somewhat more not as hot as that one. Mine is just that they break up, Triple H still ends up with Stephanie, but there's no bad blood.
Mine is like.
Well, yours is like blow up the whole universe, basically.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Or maybe I'm banging China. Like,
right.
One of those.
One of those things.
Yeah, one of those. Like, I can handle either one.
Right. Kind of the same.
But yeah, Kurt Angle marries Stephanie. He takes over the company. Anyway.
All right. So, was that your 108?
Yes.
Okay. We don't have time for this.
My
107, again, I'm feeling a theme as I'm reading these names off. Guys that, like, got to a certain level and just never had that resume to push them over, and that's Tajiri. a guy I really dug in the ring. This is where Will is. Just probably turn this off if he's even listening. Finley enough to Jerry, but a guy. I mean, I thought he was great. I think his peak was elsewhere, not in WWE. But I thought he had some really good character stuff when he first came in. Like him and Regal were fantastic together. The way they built that relationship without ever really talking was fantastic. Just two greats when it comes to like comedic timing and facial expressions. Has a lot of really good matches and some funny moments, but never really had that classic match. Never really got that classic push. A stalwart in the mid card, and then just kind of left. You know, again, he's got some really good moments, like him ripping off the Alliance shirt or the WCW shirt and showing the, or whatever the fuck shirt he had on when he took it off. And he actually had the WDF shirt underneath that right. Big moment with him and Regal kind of hug on that Raw before Invasion. The stuff with Tori Wilson, where he's the angry woman beater. She's the geisha. Like, that was pretty memorable. Him in his Yang and who's the other guy?
Akio?
Yeah, Akio and yeah, Sato, whoever the fuck they were.
Sato, they brought him back?
Yeah, but those guys. When he had them as like his running buddies, kind of doing like the dark Japanese mafia thing, like that was pretty good. So, again, a lot of good memorable stuff in there. One of my favorite moments is... And I had this like recorded on my original DVR was like on a computer I bought that had like a media center built in, and you could record bits and edit them out. And I'd edit together like DVDs of really good Raw moments and stuff. And one of my favorites was I don't know if they were hazing Tajiri. I think they were hazing. He had just come to Raw. They were hazing him, and they're like, "Oh, you got to spray the next guy. You got to miss the next guy who comes through the door." And Coach comes through the door, and he's so happy to come in the door and see Tajiri, and then Tajiri just spews mist in his face. Like, I gotta see if I can track it down. He goes, "Hey, Tajiri, what's up, my man?" And he goes to like high five him, and Tajiri just blows this mist in his face, and he starts flipping out. And then the hook is that Coach is Bischoff's boy, and Tajiri's in trouble. But it's just a really funny moment. And of course, I think he was part of the musical chairs thing too on Raw, which is pretty fun. So he's got a lot of fun moments and some good matches, just not enough to move up.
Yeah, I have him around 115. Like, kind of same, exactly that. Like, you can't, for me, like, you can talk all day about how great a worker he is, and he is, but if he doesn't have the great matches or the great moments, then he just can't make my list.
Right.
Yep. Which kind of sucks because at the time, I loved Tajiri. He's one of my favorite guys.
Yeah.
What I loved about him especially is that just those kicks alone made him legitimate.
Yes.
Like, he could knock anybody out with those, so it worked for me. But yeah, a guy I wish I could have included, but
all-time nickname too, Japanese Buzzsaw.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, for all their thought about Japanese guys not connecting with the crowd because they can't speak English, it never mattered for him.
No.
His mannerisms were perfect.
He could speak English. That was the hook. He never had to. He was so good at it, right? Because didn't he speak Japanese, Spanish, and English or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The tarantula is a great move too. Memorable for him.
And when he was Steve Austin's wise man, Ty Jiri.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
I mean, that was a lot of Austin too, but yeah, it really worked. I wish I could have included him, but
yeah, really good, really great guy, great worker,
nice man.
I'm sad he didn't get more of a bump here when he came back for the Cruiserweight Classic. He was supposed to come back, right? Did he get hurt?
I think he did. Yeah, and he was okay in that Cruiserweight Classic too.
Yeah, no, he looked good. Mm-hmm. All right, who's your 107?
The Junkyard Dog.
Oh, he's my 105. So.
Oh, shoot. We can just talk about him then.
Yeah.
Look, super memorable character from the era. When I was a kid, I loved the Junkyard Dog. I thought he was great. I bought into everything about him, but it's same problem as every other guy we're talking about. Just the lack of super high end stuff that just doesn't exist. Like, what's his biggest moment? Winning the Wrestling Classic? Is that?
No, I'd say it's actually more benign than that. It's probably teaming with Hogan. And, like, when he first came in, like, he was teaming with Hogan against, like, Andre. I mean, against, like, Stud and Bundy and, like, being part of that group and stuff. Like, that he was kind of like the 1A for a bit behind Hogan as a face. And his feud with Funk is really good, actually. They feud for a while. They had the match on Saturday's Main Event in October 85, the Halloween one, him and Funk. And it really carries all the way through into 86 when him and Tito fight the Funks at WrestleMania 2 in a pretty good match.
Yeah, that's all right, that match.
Yeah, so he's got a good run throughout that period. That's kind of his best stretch. And then the stuff with Race is fine. That's kind of his end. And then he just gets so out of weight, just becomes dog shit in the ring. I mean, he's awful. Like, we watched a match recently for, I think it was the June 87 MSG House Show with Tim and Paul Orndorff in 87, and he just looks awful. And he's around for another year plus at that point. I think he's around until the end of 88. So he's got a lot of dead in the water time there at the end of the year. But for a bit, he was super hot.
Yeah. Stinks up the ring with Rick Rude at SummerSlam 88.
Ugh, yeah.
Dead weight in that Battle Royal at WrestleMania 4.
Yes. Dead heavyweight. Yeah. Because he is. By three, he's pretty much cooked. I mean,
he's pretty much dead.
Yeah. He's got a 2-year run in there. That's good. From late 84 to WrestleMania 3. And that's about it.
He looked exactly like a guy who taught me acting in theater school. And one day I called the guy the Junkyard Dog, and he got so angry. He didn't know what he
did. He know who the Junkyard Dog was?
He didn't know who he was, so he thought I was calling him a dog. And it's me calling this Trinidad man a dog. It wasn't a good scene. Anyway.
Okay. So yeah, JYD, great promo too. Great charisma, energy, connected with the crowd. I think that speaks to how strong of a character and connection he had, that he hung around as long as he did, because he was a guy that looked like he should have probably been turfed when they were kind of cleaning house of the older guard in by 87-ish. But he hangs around for a while longer, and I think it's just because of his name value and all that stuff there.
Yeah, and that Grab Them Cake song was also a thing.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely a thing.
I sang it to my wife the other day, and she got very upset.
All right, what are we on, 106?
106, no, you did one of your – yeah, you did one of your 106.
JYD was my 105.
Yeah.
So my 106 is Brian Kendrick. Yeah, I love his stuff with Paul London. I thought that was a lot of fun. I love his The Brian Kendrick run with Ezekiel Jackson. I love that he got his moments in the sun at that Unforgiven scramble. That was cool. And I've liked him in this run for the most part. He's tapered a bit, but I thought his initial work in the Cruiserweight Classic and at the beginning of 205 Live was really good when he was kind of doing the, you know, I'm here because this is all I got left. Like, you guys are young and whatever, and I'm the old veteran that needs the money from my family and blah, blah. Like, I kind of like that version of Brian Kendrick too, where we saw him initially when he was out there as a young, you know, guy flying around, energetic, blah, blah, blah. And then he comes out here, and now he's evolved into the old grizzled veteran role. So I liked watching that growth from him, and he's a guy really I've always liked watching in the ring. And I don't know, I don't have London on this list. I probably could have just put them together because I liked London working with like Kidman and stuff, but London just never seemed to take it as seriously. Like Kendrick to me took it a little more seriously than London did, and that bumps him up in my eyes.
If you put him and London in the same thing and then put it on your ballot, Stephen Graham would have a shit fit. Just so you know.
Okay. I don't care.
They need to be separate, those tag teams.
Yes.
But yes, I like Brian Kendrick. He doesn't come close to where we're talking about now for me. But, I mean, this is the guy who used to run out naked wearing just a scarf, right?
Yeah, tremendous.
Because of that commercial. So that takes some balls. So, yeah, I like Kendrick. And I thought he was probably, like, early on in the Cruiserweight tournament, one of the early MVPs of the tournament.
Oh, 100%. You can see why they put him in the main event at 205 Live out of the gate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and he was one of the guys who signed. But yes, I certainly understand. But yeah, no, I really like Kendrick. I love the London stuff. Everything you said about him is right. I don't really have anything to add with him, though. All except for that naked stuff, which was great.
Who's your 106?
Kamala! The Ugandan giant. Scary. I was so terrified.
Yeah.
As a child. Like,
wait, so which era of Kamala?
Oh, no, we're not. 92 we don't talk about.
Okay, yeah.
Because that's why he doesn't make the list, basically. there was a tape I rented as a kid where he ate a live chicken.
Yeah.
I think on an episode
TNT.
Of TNT.
Yep.
And I was so terrified of this guy. I'd never seen anything like him. Just a really scary, awful guy. Like, terrifying guy. The stomach. It just made me uncomfortable watching him. Like, the chanting to the ring, kimchi. It all just made me scared.
Yeah, we used to actually in grade school. We probably looked like fucking idiots looking back at it, but we would. We had this. It's all flooded back to me as I'm saying it, and this is how fucking ridiculous it is. I'm about to tell the story, but this one kid that sat at our table was kind of like a fringe wrestling fan, but he was kind of stupid, and he liked smashing apples on his forehead. And to fire him up before he was going to do it, we would bang the table and do the Kamala song, and then he would smash the apple on his head. And we keep doing it until he'd gear up, and then he'd smash the apple across his forehead.
Fucking stupid things we did as kids.
How stupid.
Yeah.
So what happened? We didn't have fucking phones and shit at your disposal.
We had imaginations.
That's what you had to do. You had to smash apples and sing racist songs.
In my day, we were racist and we broke apples. I liked him. I even for a while, I liked that he couldn't figure out how to pin somebody, despite the fact that he'd been in the wrestling business 7 years at that point.
Figure it out!
Scary guy. I have a figure of him on my shelf, and I'm always worried if someone comes over and thinks I'm some sort of a racist if they don't understand what Kamala is.
Or a voodoo guy.
Yeah. So, I wish he could have been higher. His feud with Hogan is amazing.
Oh, those matches are so good.
Yeah, that's probably the highest he gets. His feud with Undertaker is probably the lowest. Or maybe even when he goes good, that might be even lower with Preacher Slick.
His initial couple months building up to SummerSlam 92 is not bad. He's really portrayed as a monster. As soon as he walks out of the ring at SummerSlam 92 and he's afraid, that's what did him in. That was it. He was built well enough up into that match. And even as they're coming out for that match, it kind of feels like a big one. And then as the match is going on, you're like, no, this guy's got fucking nothing in the tank. And then the coffin match is somehow worse in Survivor Series.
Do you think he's hurt at all by the period of time he was away being too long? With him and, say, Bundy when he came back in 95.
Yeah.
Both of them I found these guys are back? Aren't they old?
Yeah. Yeah, because they looked old then. They didn't look young. It's not like a guy that looked pretty young and came back. Like Backlund. He didn't really look much different when he came back, even though it was 8 years. But Kamala just felt older. You're right. Although, I don't know. To me, I didn't really know him that much in the WWF because I started watching in 90. And I knew from After Mags and shit what he was. So But I can't say I had seen him in 84 and 85 and 86. And then, oh God, this guy's back. So I guess maybe for me it wasn't as much that. But I just think it's more that they booked him like a pussy against The Undertaker.
Yeah.
And then the turn was just stupid. Yeah, he's got one memorable moment. I think that's that battle royal where he chases Kimchi around the fucking balcony at the Manhattan Center.
Yeah.
And then he's got that weird IC title match with Shawn. But I don't know. You just can only get so much mileage out of the dumb guy gimmick. You know what I mean? Okay, here he is again, getting duped and kicked in the back of the head. It's fucking whatever.
Could you put on some pants, please? That skirt is enough. It's enough.
But he's a guy that before I watched these Hogan matches recently for the podcast, I probably wouldn't have had super high. But he's at least maybe fringy for me now after watching the Hogan matches.
And
the Kamala cage match too.
Yeah, that's very good. I had a wrestling Kamala figure, and I was so scared of him I wouldn't even play with it. It stayed in the box.
Okay. Who's your I like just ending on your inane comments. Who's your so I did my 105 was JYD.
No, yeah, okay. Did you do 106?
Yes, Kendrick.
Kendrick. So my 105. Are you doing this on purpose now with these pauses?
No, you're 105. Go for it.
Now?
Yeah, now.
My 105 is Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, baby.
American Dream. Yeah, baby. I love Dusty. I really, even now when I look back, I really like his run. It's only about a year and a half, but the guy comes in and as ridiculous as he's dressed is just immediately one of the most over guys on the roster. Immediate connection with the fan, super over. I like the vignettes. I actually really have a soft spot for his match with Honky Tonk Man at SummerSlam 89.
Is it like that's a soft spot in his belly?
Oh, the liver spot in his belly, baby. I think it's cool that he had Taker's first match. I love when they're beating the crap out of Dustin, Bossman, and they're yelling, "You're beating your son!" I just love it. These are all bad things, I guess, but I think he's also really fun in the 70s in his series with Superstar Billy Graham.
Yeah,
really good there too. I guess his only real his kind of weak spot is his feud with Savage for me, which is sad because Savage is my favorite guy. And it could have been so good. I just think they never. For whatever reason, they never gave them enough time to do what they needed to do. But great promo, fun character. he even made that stupid sapphire search work that you guys were always talking about.
You believe that he loved her.
Yeah. And you know he hated her in real life. So.
Why wouldn't you?
Right?
I didn't have him listed here, but I did consider him for a bit. Again, just not enough meat on the bone. I guess the Grandmaster Surprise peak in the ring doesn't really have anything in my mind that breaks like that 2.5-star range in his comeback. Yeah. I mean, the Savage matches were definitely a downtime. It's a rare downtime for Savage as well, which wasn't a ton of. But the beginning of the feud is fun. Like that Brother Love show at the Rumble and Six. Mm-hmm. If it ended there, they probably would have been better off. Dragging it into the summer, to SummerSlam and beyond, was like way too much. If they just made it 3 months and that's it, they do the Liz thing at Six and we're out. And then move on Dusty to someone else. But his feud with Boss Man, solid. There's not a lot to it. Like, he doesn't really get blown off beyond him getting the biggest beating of his big fat life at Survivor Series.
The best. To his music, no less, which makes it even better.
Oh, so good. He actually had more vignettes than I remembered. I was watching him with Scott. I think it was Scott when he was here recently. I think they're on the Dusty Collection, maybe, on the network. I didn't realize how many there were. There was like 7 of those fucking things that him doing all the jobs and everything to beat my meat and all that stuff. But yeah, he had a lot of those and yeah, very memorable. I mean, great theme song, great promo, obviously the polka dots, the look, he really embraced it. I just don't think he has enough in ring to make this 100 at this point.
Yeah. And it's sad because he's such a, I really do dig the character.
I mean, what's his biggest moment?
Maybe when he's dancing with the cop hat and the nightstick.
Yeah, or it's Six, I guess, right, with Liz and everything.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't have much. I mean, actually, maybe his biggest moment might be the fucking bull rope match with Orton when he comes back.
Yeah.
Or even some of the stuff with, like, I mean, he wasn't active at that point, but when he was with Dusty and was with Goldust and Cody with the Shield and all that.
Oh, when he put his hand in Steph's face and she got all angry.
Yeah, so like shit like that. But, yeah, just not enough there.
A shame.
A shameful thing. All right, 104 is for me Alberto Del Rio. You have him higher?
I got him way higher.
Okay. I don't know. He's one of those guys where, like, in my mind, you know, there's a girl that you feel like should be higher. You, I guess, a guy, but you can't get to the point where they are. You feel like this person should be attractive. Why aren't they? Like, to me, that's Del Rio. Like, I should like Del Rio. Like, I feel like I like Del Rio, but I can't explain why. And when I go to watch his stuff, I'm like, no, I don't know. Should I like him? Like, I can't piece it together. So, that's where I'm at with Del Rio. I feel like I should have him higher, but I don't know why. And I can't say why. So
speak the truth. He's not hot enough for you.
He's not. And I don't like what he did to Paige. But he,
he's an innocent man.
Oh god. Actually, his comeback kind of ruined it for me too. Like, I was really excited when he popped up again, and then he just sucked during that run. Like, it was, and they stuck him with fucking Zeb and all that shit, and just, it just made no sense. The only good thing he brought out of that whole run was the double stomp, even though it was super contrived. Like, it was pretty
nasty. I hated that spot, and I love him,
but I did like the I did like parts of the League of Nations. The main parts I liked about them was just how, like, ridiculously excited they were to, like, hug each other and celebrate
when they were happy.
Yeah, like, that was the best. That was the best stuff he did during that run. Initial run, I thought he was a great character. I don't think he really had that match that popped for quite a bit. I liked him most actually as a face. As kind of like the Mexican Rocky in a way. Like, he had that boxing robe and he'd come out. He was really positioned as like the Mexican savior for a bit. I liked that part of it. And I liked his match with Swagger at Mania and the match with Dolph, obviously, with the cash in. And I like the one where he kills Dolph, too, where he gives him the concussions with the kicks.
We'll talk about that later because I have him way higher. But that match, to me, is such a perfect double turn. Like, and it's done without any sort of contrivances. It's just the action in the ring, and I love
it. Was that a pay-per-view or Raw?
Yeah, it was a Payback 2013.
Right. Okay. So, solid promo. A guy that never took that next step to get over. I thought he really had it when he was a face. I thought they were really going to push him strong as the face of SmackDown, being the Mexican hero. And it just never, for whatever reason, just kind of stalled out. I think the Dolph thing kind of killed his momentum. Actually, I think putting him with Swagger hurt him too, in a way. Because Swagger got that push out of nowhere, and then he got fucked with the marijuana thing and everything. And he didn't really get like a quality heel, like, feud for the fans to get super behind him. So I think that hurt him too. I think he's a guy that's always got to the cusp for me, but never could get it across the goal line.
Yeah, like, look, we're gonna talk. I'm gonna talk about it later because he's okay. really much higher on my list.
But great my song, favorite, though, by the way.
Oh, you know, when his Face song is even better because it's much more festive.
Right. Oh, I love the Face song. Oh, it's so good. The horns and everything. So good.
Yeah. My favorite Del Rio moment, like it does it a little, is he fights Christian at SummerSlam 13, which is a match that's forgotten because it's buried under such an amazing card. Mm-hmm. But he comes to the ring with two black eyes from I don't know what. But my friends and I were talking about how it looked like he had to fight his way to the building.
Yeah, yeah.
Which just added to his mystique. I just liked that he looked like he could legitimately fuck you up. But we'll talk about him later.
Yeah, no, he did. And he's got a couple of good stuff with Punk, too, in there at the end of the year. So, yeah, I mean, he's got good stuff. He's on the borderline for me. He's right out there. I got him 104, right outside the 100 for me.
Yeah. My 104, you might have in your 100, I'm not sure, is Goldberg.
Yeah, he's just inside my 100.
Just inside. So for me, like, I mean, I think we talked about him at length on one of our Making the Cuts.
And nothing's changed. So, yeah, we probably can just hit the high
back
points
to
on
that.
Him.
Like, look, larger than life. He was always a megastar. Didn't need to be a heel. He was great as a face.
Mm-hmm. His Vince Russo disagrees, but yep.
Yeah, fuck him. His debut night was fight. The whole Brock series is great. WrestleMania 33 might be, like, the best sub-5-minute match they've had at WrestleMania. He's just hindered for me. Like, I thought his first run was okay. His second run was way better. Mm-hmm. I don't fault him at all for his squashes. I like watching him work. I think his stuff looks good. It's probably all legit, which is why it looks good. But yeah, like, I just outside the top 100 for me.
I think that's where he would have been. I had him borderline, but this last run put him in. I think I covered that on the Making the Cut. That I thought he was so good in this latest run that he earned his way into the list. The moment at Survivor Series when he squashes Brock is an all-time moment. The match at WrestleMania, maybe the best sub-5-minute match of all time in the company's history. So that was tremendous. And, I think he stepped up his promo game during this run, too. Like, to me, that helped a ton. I liked his story and character was relatable during this run. Just wants to go out there and have his son see him wrestle, you know, one last time. So, or he had never seen him. So I thought that was really a cool story, a nice touch. I thought this run that was pretty much flawless. I mean, the only blip would be the Owens match, right? And that was more booking than match. So, I loved him during this run, and I thought he has just enough in his first run to get him over. I don't blame him for WrestleMania 20. It was just the perfect storm of bullshit. All came together.
The only thing I would add to his first run, and I just started because I'm watching through to 2003 right now, is he's pretty heavily booed his first two matches out. He's booed pretty heavily against The Rock, and he's booed pretty heavily against Jericho.
Yeah,
which
so
I didn't remember until rewatching.
Well, I think The Rock thing is, like, no one wanted Rock to leave. It's the WCW guy coming in. Hollywood Rock was so good. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's just bound to happen. Plus, it ends up being a match instead of a squash. You can't squash The Rock, but out of the gate, you're already having Goldberg go 15 minutes. You know, like that was. And then Jericho was coming off of that fight backstage where Jericho owned him. And Jericho was just a guy that was getting cheered against, like, everyone during that stretch, no matter what.
Yeah.
So I think it was just, again, a confluence of events where it's like, all right, we have the super over guy. He was held down by Goldberg in WCW. Now he just whipped Goldberg backstage. Why are we going to cheer for Goldberg? So I think that was part of it, too. He turns it around, Goldberg, right around SummerSlam. And the chamber is great. And then I like him in 04 up to Mania. Like, I thought he was really good then, too.
Yeah, I mean, he went, like, I think we mentioned this in our last one, but he wins that title at 03. We're having a whole different, at SummerSlam 03, we're having a whole different conversation, I think.
Yeah, oh, 100%.
Because then we have that amazing moment.
And I think we still have it. Like, I can't punish him in any way. Like, we got the moment. It was the crowd going batshit for him, destroying everyone. Yeah. It just, the finish was just softer than it should have been, that's all.
And he got hit with two sledgehammers, which for me is done for the match. Covered this earlier, he'd be dead. Awkward pause. Great. Let's move along.
I love the awkward pause. What are we at? 103?
Yeah, 103. Mine is Haku, so we already talked about him.
All right. Mine's a guy I actually had in my list until the very last, like the day I submitted, I moved him out.
Ooh.
You ready? Any guesses? Yeah.
Jim Duggan.
Ironically, Jim Duggan's the guy I moved into the list.
Yes.
Because of this guy, and that's Larry Zbyszko.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I had Larry Z at the back end of my list the whole time. And a lot of it had to do with the Will shows where they talked about him, like, and yeah. really went over, like, in depth how great he was. The great feud with Bruno and all that stuff.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I haven't seen enough. And I don't know. I just could have put him over the other guys. Like, at the end of the day, I've seen more Duggan. I understand more Duggan. I get more Duggan. I felt funny leaving Jim Duggan off for Larry Zbysko at that point. You know, like he was just one of those guys where I wish the list was just 103 and I could have just had him on my list. But
Duggan's just a better wrestler than Larry Zbysko, admit it.
Yeah. Is he on your list?
I have him at 98.
Okay.
So
yeah. I think that's where I had him, honestly. It was like 98 or 99. Yeah, all right. So go ahead, talk about him.
Yeah, like I put him in. I put him in basically on the feud of the on the strength of the Bruno feud, which I do think is very good. But he's a guy I didn't want to include. So I just don't like him. Like
You're not into human games of chess?
No, I'm not into that at all. his WCW commentary run made me despise the human voice. So
yeah.
So I have him at 98. Bruno feud is great. I really didn't like his tag work with Tony Garea, which I watched a lot of when I was watching some old house shows to prepare for this. So I slid him in solely on that feud and solely so that someone wouldn't tweet me that I was an asshole, basically.
Yeah, that's why I had him the whole time. Him in there the whole time,
right?
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
You were just braver than I was on
it.
Larry's
just became a numbers guy for me. It became a numbers game. I had to bump someone, and I kept going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and I'm like, I just can't justify it anymore. I had to do it. But I only moved him back a little bit. I just haven't seen enough. It is what it is, you know.
Yeah,
I'll give him the shout out, but there's not enough there for me to have gone by to justify putting him over some of the other guys having the list.
His forehead is way too big also. Like, I don't know if we need to talk about that.
He always had a permanent receding hairline.
Yeah. A shiny, like, receding forehead. 102?
Go for it.
The problem is
I take a second to, like, get to my list and look something, and you just stop before I think you're going to stop. I'm used to Scott, who just keeps talking, you know what I mean? So, like, you just got to stop, and I'm never, like, ready for your stop, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and then you want to fuck me over. I got it. Everything's becoming clear. Larry Zbysko, forehead, got it. 102 was like one of my last cuts, which really hurt. And that's Bill Eady is cut at number 102.
Wow.
I really – you know, people are really down on Demolition in terms of like a tag team, but I don't care. I love Demolition. I loved watching them. I didn't care that they were – someone would tell you their dog shit in the ring. I don't think – I think they played their parts fine.
Someone will tell you their dog shit in the ring. I don't know.
Someone will tell you that. Yeah. But I found they played their parts perfectly as Demolition. I liked his Masked Superstar run too, which was putting him ahead of, say, Barry Darso to get him on the list.
Well, and the Machine stuff.
Oh, yeah, and the Machine stuff. You're right, which I also dug, which was a lot of fun. I really wanted to give Demolition a shout out, but in the end, the Masked Superstar and the Machines wasn't enough, and Demolition. I have tag team guys we're going to get to as we talk, but because I couldn't put them both in, I didn't feel comfortable just putting him in. So he finishes right on the cusp.
Okay. I have a good chunk in, so.
Yeah, well. I guess I had the balls with Bill Eady.
I'm stronger than you. all right, 102, is that where we're at?
Yeah.
Wait, how did you get ahead of me? Was Eady or 102 or 103?
102, I jumped ahead.
Who was your 103?
You were pausing, so I slipped right in.
Oh, okay.
103 was Haku.
Oh, right. That's what I'm going to be confused. Yeah. Okay. 102 for me is Hercules. He's a guy that I had a hard time. I would have never imagined him back in May, like even sniffing my list. But I've actually come to really like him watching the 85, 86, 87 stuff. More of a worker than I thought he was. Really good at controlling the pace of a match. He's aggressive. He's hard-hitting. Great look. His match with Hogan on the Science Main Event was a lot of fun. He's actually been the guy carrying Billy Jack Haynes through their matches. He's just had some really good stuff on these MSG house shows. So, like some of the other guys I mentioned so far, doesn't have the big moment or memorable jump-up matches to get him onto the list, but he's actually been enough of a worker to me to understand, hey, this guy was a bit more of a hand than expected. And I haven't even really gotten to – I think his face run is weaker because I just don't think he's good at selling. But I like him a lot in Power and Glory. I thought that was a great team, and I think he did a lot of the work in that. So I think he deserves at least some recognition as a character.
I liked Hercules. I have him somewhere in, like, my 120s. Like, yeah. I considered him. maybe Jake Roberts' best one-on-one pay-per-view match was against Hercules at SummerSlam 88, damning with faint praise. But I really dug Hercules the whole time. I remember as a kid, too, thinking that he was one of those guys who could legitimately beat Hulk Hogan because he was stronger, and that torture act looked good. I thought he threw really good punches, too. Yep. I dug Hercules' punches. I think it was his face run, and his music was terrible in the face. And then when it would go high, and he's swinging the chain in the ring. It's like higher than the human voice can go.
Dogs just start cringing.
They're howling outside my window in the cold.
Hercules is here.
Well, didn't Randy Savage have a dog named Hercules?
I think he did. It's all coming full circle. When Hercules died, we were going to Raw. I was with Scott and a couple other guys. Claire. And it was right before WrestleMania 20, I think, he passed away. And we were sitting right next to the commentators. And we made a sign, Claire and I, R.I.P. Hercules, with a chain going in all of the letters. And we held it up, and we got Lawler to acknowledge us and kind of give us like a sad nod and a thumbs up. We're like, King, look at our sign. We're recognizing Hercules.
All right, already.
Yeah, he's like, all right, puppies.
No, I wish I could have included. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't find he has really too many bad matches, too many bad outings. His match with the Warrior at WrestleMania 4 was pretty bad, but it's more just slow and that weird power stuff. I love him winning that Battle Royal before WrestleMania 3.
Yes. Oh, that's a great match.
Yeah. And I love him beating the crap out of Billy Jack Haynes after his match at WrestleMania 3.
God, we've watched like at least 5 Hercules Billy Jack Haynes matches now.
Right.
And yeah, Billy Jack just drags him down because he's good against everyone else. He's really good. He's such a good pacing heel. I never realized. I always thought he's plotting, and he's not. Like, he's really aggressive. Like, that match with Hogan, have you watched that recently, Science Man?
No, I haven't, actually.
It's not that long. You should throw it on. It's actually surprisingly feisty. Like, he's really believable. And the story is really good, too, because Bobby had just bought his contract from he was Blassie, and then trying to think, was he with Slick? And then Bobby had like just taken over his contract. And they do like a really good job of putting over that Bobby's going to get him over the top. You know what I mean? And like this, he got him a title match like he promised him. And here's this big shot. And he ends up losing by DQ. So he doesn't get pinned. And it's a really fun match. And he's so believable and aggressive in the match. I really dug it.
Yeah. Like, he's a guy I kind of wish I could have included. Like, I dig Hercules. Mm-hmm. But again, just doesn't have the tip-top match, so it doesn't work for me.
R.I.P. big guy.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to? I'm going to slip back in. I'm going to do my 101. My 101. It hurt. It cut me deep. It was a tough one. I just kept looking at my list and trying to think who I could drop for him. I couldn't find anyone, so I just had to leave him here. One of my favorites of all time was my screen name, my instant messenger name, everywhere. Bam Bam Bigelow.
No.
Just misses my list. Great athlete, great wrestler, decent promo, a couple of good moments, but again, a guy that just lacks the big match to get him over in my list. And I know I keep saying that, and you're going to end up looking at like my 90 to 100 and be like, well, none of these fucking guys had big matches either. But I don't know. Like, Bigelow just seemed to be missing that little something. The 95 run, I've actually, my new hot take on as high as you can be about 1995 Raw booking, but the story was always that he got kind of fucked by the click and that he was promised like to be a star and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think he should have been. Like, I think they made the right move actually pushing him back down. He gets hot. He has the match with LT. He's Diesel's friend, but they're trying to legitimize Diesel as like this cool athlete that's schmoozing with Michael Jordan and the baseball. He's doing the rock and jock, and you get this little fucking fat short guy with bald with the fucking tattoo. Like, he just looked like his idiot friend from like the old neighborhood that you just want him to ditch to become a star. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Oh, here's Big Kev with fucking little Scott tagging along. You know, it's just, I don't know. He's got kind of this whiny voice, and I always thought he kind of got fucked and maybe could have been a star during that stretch. But looking back, I honestly think he would have been better suited just to stay heel and never turn after the LT stuff. And actually maybe fought Diesel instead of like Mabel during that stretch or something. But I think that hurts him that he never had that big run that popped, you know. But again, a really great worker. He's had some really higher end matches, but nothing that breaks like don't know if he ever broke a 4-star match, you know. Like, he's got the one with Tatanka against Kid and Holly. He's really good. His matches with Brett are really good. But I just don't think he ever took that step up. And it pained me to leave him off, just because he was always one of my favorites. But I just couldn't justify bumping him up any higher.
Yeah, I got him a bit. I got him quite a bit on my list.
Whatever.
No, I know. Also, fuck you. I was thinking
we're
that, like,
be bankrupt and broke.
Oh, no. I enjoy his work. I think it really depends on what you think of that King of the Ring final match.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty solid, great match. I wouldn't go anywhere near 5 or anything, but like,
I don't know if I'd even go to 4, but it's really good.
It's around, it's for me, it's like teetering around 4 probably. Yeah. I think his time to, the time to really push him to the moon was 87. It feels like he was so over after that Survivor Series match. Where
that was on him though, right?
Yeah, something happened, right? He fucked up or...
Well, I think he was just being like super arrogant. He was like a young kid and was bragging about his money. And
right.
All that shit.
Idiot. But yeah, no, I like Mad Men Bigelow. I have him a bit higher, so I guess I'll talk about him later as he comes up because he's quite a bit higher for me.
Okay.
Like, it's funny because, like, we keep talking about guys who don't have that, like, tip-top moment.
Yeah.
So, like, but there's a lot of guys, even on the top 100, that don't have that moment.
Yeah.
So then it becomes, like, who has more of a collection of good stuff.
Right.
And I find he has enough of a collection of good stuff to make it.
Yeah, he's definitely a workhorse in 93, 94, like, on Raw and pay-per-view. He wrestles a ton, and, you know, the doink stuff hurts him. You know, like, he's really embroiled in that for a while. From like October 93 to WrestleMania 10, he's stuck in that. And then he doesn't really do much. He's with Luna kind of until he gets with DiBiase, and that's when he picks back up. So he kind of has like almost a year of nothing, which I think hurts him a bit too.
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard when like there's already kind of a not exactly a ton of top guys, and you got him fighting with Doink.
Right.
Right? Like, whereas Bret Hart's feuding with Owen, Razor's.
Sean.
I guess with the click, So it's like he kind of gets lost in the shuffle, which is sad.
Right, he's a guy like, why couldn't like Savage just feud been with him instead of Crush? You know what I mean?
Because he wasn't buddies with Crush, brother.
Fuck you, Bammer.
Uh-huh, I'm not friends with you.
Not getting my feud. But that could have been fun in 94, Bigelow and Savage.
That would have been great.
Yeah.
And it would have worked exactly to the dynamic. Like,
I mean, even the Tatanka feud is not that great. Like, they have the fun 6-man at SummerSlam.
That's good. That's a good match.
Yeah, the Rumble 94 is okay when they fight there. But that kind of peters out, too, after he cuts his hair and all that shit.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's in that terrible Survivor Series match. Mm-hmm. I can't believe why couldn't he win that match?
Yeah, I don't know. He's good in the Survivor Series 94 one, though. The Corporation against Luger.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he is. But he loses that one, too, so.
No, they win that one, doesn't he?
No.
Yeah.
Luger wins that one.
No. Luger never won a fucking big match. He loses that. I think Bigelow and Bundy are the survivors.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No. Let's keep saying no yes as I look it up.
Luger wins in 93.
He doesn't win in 94?
I'm looking at it right now. No, Million Dollar Team defeated Guts and Glory, baby.
Oh, God damn it. I was thinking of 93.
I think Bigelow's a survivor. Yeah, Bigelow and Bundy survive.
What a stupid call that is.
Tatanka pins Luger, and then wait, hang on. No, Luger pins Tatanka, and then Bunny beats him like 7 seconds later.
Okay. Well, I guess I blocked that out of my mind.
Yeah, we all did. All right, who's your 101, and then we can move on to our actual list.
Our actual list.
An hour on the fucking honorable mentions.
My 101 is a magnificent pick. I had him on my list forever. A guy I don't like, but I felt I needed to have him on. But then I said, fuck it, and bumped him off, and that's Don Morocco. I think Don Morocco is a great character in terms of, like, the lazy beach bum. I could not stand his matches. And I don't think I watched one that was good.
Yeah.
So it was an easy bump off for me. But that being said, huge important character in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, he's on my list. He's a guy I actually had a little bit higher, and then I bumped him down. He's decently higher than this, but I had him much higher. And then as I kind of was going through my list, I was like, I can't justify it. But he's kind of in a group of guys that are similar to him. I'll put it that way. We'll see.
Yeah. And his marriage to superstar Billy Graham was weird and uncomfortable for me when I was 8.
Yes. Yeah, that was odd. But before that, he's really good. So, well, I guess I'll save that for later.
Yeah. Although I will say I did enjoy the Jesus Christ Superstar music for him.
Yes.
I thought it was completely inappropriate, but
it's very elegant at WrestleMania 4. It actually makes him feel like a big deal at 4, and he keeps playing and he keeps coming out for those tournament matches with Billy Graham. He actually feels like a big deal. Like, that's probably my first exposure to him, I think, was probably that show. I think, like, when I first started watching, I want to say, like, WrestleMania 5 is one I rented early on, and I kind of worked my way backwards. Like, I didn't go to, like, WrestleMania 1 and move up. You know what I mean? I kind of, like, watched, like, 89 stuff and then some 88 stuff. So I think 4 was what I probably rented pretty early in. So that's probably my first exposure to Morocco.
You're probably enraptured by the 2 tapes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was awesome. Like, oh, my God, I get 2 tapes. It only costs 1.
Yeah. Yeah, but nothing really of substance there in that comeback.
No.
Does he fight at SummerSlam that year?
Yeah, he gets killed by Bravo, doesn't he? Like a
that's
minute.
That's it. That's it. Yeah.
Bravo had to get that win back from WrestleMania.
Crazy. It's crazy. Do you know Bravo's a thing? And he's also dead. He died like 10 kilometers from my house.
Yeah, he's buried in your backyard. It's weird.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's great.
Hope you've enjoyed this episode of Making the Cut. Make sure you stay tuned as we continue to work our way through our list. At some sort of period of time here on PlaceToBeNation.com. Follow all of our podcast feeds on iTunes, PlaceToBeNation Wrestling, PlaceToBeNation Pop, Pro Wrestling Only, and you can get each and every thing you may need in your pop culture world, especially when it comes to this project. So that's it. Talk to you next time.
Yeah!
Okay, there you go. Dirty tricks you make me.